South at 5, 73 degrees in Racine, 72 in Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I am so glad that we can have with us today two women to talk about one of the loveliest and happiest events in Kenosha in the summer months, namely the Four Seasons Garden Club Secret Garden Walk, which is coming up this Saturday, July 9th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And with us in the studios today to talk about this happy event are, first of all, Linda Guttormson-Guy, a good friend of the morning show who has been with us any number of occasions, I've lost count by now, to talk about the event. She is a twice past president and chair of publicity for the Secret Garden Walk. And Linda, it's good to have you back in WGTD studios.
Always happy to be here, Greg.
And also with us today is Courtney Grieve, who is a horticulture instructor here at Gateway Technical College, chair over horticulture programming and the urban forestry program. And Courtney, we welcome you as well.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Glad we can have this, time together. So, Linda, before we talk about the Secret Garden Walk, let's have you talk about the Four Seasons Garden Club, which has been an important part of your life for a long time. Just kind of give us a little history of the club, how long it's been around, and for its members, what it represents or gives them.
Okay. To clarify, I have not been around since day one in the Garden Club. I want to get that on the table right now, because the club was established back in 1963. So it's been around for quite some time, and it has gone through many changes over the years. We feel proud that we're one of the few garden clubs, as we meet other organizations around the state and such. We're one of the few clubs that hold their meetings in the evening, because so many of the members are working girls, and that doesn't mean you always have Thursday afternoon open for a cup of tea. Mm-hmm. But that's where garden clubs started back in 1963, and we no longer wear hats and white gloves to the meetings. Our gloves are usually vinyl, and our fingernails are dirty, because we are gardeners. We're all for the most part active gardeners, and one of the activities that we have supported for a number of years and continue to maintain. You can see our work on display down at the Kemper Center, the Kemper Grounds. There is the Margaret Meyer Memorial Garden, which is named after an early president of the club, a member, and it's been continued to be maintained by the club all these years. And it's only the garden walk itself is our primary fundraiser. We do also have a plant sale in spring, which we started, I'm going to guess 6, maybe 8 years ago. But it's been growing in popularity. But the garden walk is still our number one project, and the number one event in the city as far as gardening. Well, as far as we're concerned, anyway.
Very good.
The garden walk has been going on for 20 years now, and we've learned a lot. We've grown a lot. We've kind of created a standard for ourselves that, you know, we're happy to stick with and provide a really quality event for the people of Kenosha. Mm-hmm. We've got wonderful cooperation from yourself at WGTD. The Kenosha News has been very good to us over the years, and our members work hard to put a great day together.
Mm. There of course was no garden walk back in 2020, but you made a comeback in 2021. So
exactly.
And I think a lot of people were happy to see the event return.
And I think a lot of people can identify with that. You know, we were all kind of hunkered down in 2020, and it was nice to break free. And in some respects, there are a lot of gardens out there that benefited from that shutdown. Mm. People looking for projects at home that were able to spend time in the garden that perhaps they hadn't had before.
That's a really good point. Before we get into the garden walk this year, I want to give Courtney a chance to give just a little bit of overview of what she does here at Gateway Technical College as part of the horticulture faculty here. First, just tell us a little bit about what got you interested in this area in general, that is the area of horticulture.
Sure. I think that, you know, we all always have people that encourage us to be a part of being outside when we're young. And for me, my mom was someone who tried to garden. She thought she had a green thumb and didn't always. So we had a lot of learning opportunities of what worked well and what didn't in the garden. And I was fortunate to actually start working at a garden center at the age of 14 in my hometown. So the roots kind of planted themselves pretty early for me in the world of horticulture. And even when I was in high school, I was involved in our ag programming and FFA and things like that. Afterwards, I kind of took a detour and joined the military. And when I came home from a deployment overseas to Iraq in 2003-2004, I started night classes actually at a technical college, what is now known as Madison College. and was taking general studies courses to transfer into UW-Madison, thinking I was going to be a pharmacist. Well, I can't be inside that long. So while on campus, actually, I ended up venturing over to the horticulture area, and I had been there when I was in high school for a plant identification competition. And the second I walked through the door, I said, I need to change my major. And I changed and received my bachelor's degree in horticulture, actually international agriculture. Had various internships everywhere from being the first intern at Wollersheim Winery out in their vineyards, being an intern at Olbrich Botanical Garden, the West Madison Ag Research Station. So a lot of big variety. And then I decided I'm going to go to grad school. And so here I went in grad school focusing on organic and sustainable vegetable production. I wrote a 72-long-page paper on organic snap bean production in the state of Wisconsin. So if you really want to know about snap beans, also known as green beans, I can get you that paper. It's not very exciting. And then while getting through grad school, you know, it's an opportunity to be a teaching assistant. And that was where I learned or realized that I learn better by teaching other people. So the class that maybe I struggled in as an undergrad, I actually then worked harder at and understood better. And now I have the opportunity to bring all of that knowledge into many of the classes that I teach here at Gateway, which is, to me, really fun because it's a very hands-on environment, and we get an opportunity to be in our labs every day and doing the fun things of propagation and air layering, grafting, things like that, but always tying it back to the science of how do our plants respond and how do we pay attention to that.
Oh, I love that. That's really, really great. Yeah. And how long have you been at Gateway then?
I've actually been at Gateway for about 9.5 years now.
Time flies.
I know. I cannot believe it. So, but you know what? I have to say our program right now is the strongest it has ever been. We had 2020 was actually great for us. It was an opportunity to we had done some restructuring of our academic programs, building in some embedded credentials and making things a little bit what we consider a pathway for students to see a light at the end of the tunnel, not just say, oh my gosh, I have 2 years of schooling. No, you're learning credentials along the way. So a certificate, a tech diploma, associate degree. And plus 2020 helped us because we had some big remodeling going on. Mm-hmm. We've had the opportunity to refresh our gardens as well. So I think of it, you know, now that we're going to be a feature on the Garden Walk, it's almost people seeing our program with new eyes for the first time, which is great.
Very good. We'll dig into the specifics in a little bit, but just summarize the extent of Gateway's horticulture program's participation in the Secret Garden Walk. And is this a first, or has there been a connection before?
So this is actually, correct, Linda, our third time.
Third
time being on the Garden Walk. We were originally supposed to be on it in 2020, and that was canceled. And then 2021, we were under large construction, actually redoing, remodeling our head house to make it ADA compliant and adding in new technologies. And so we said 2021 is not our year. And then they contacted us again and said, you know what, 2022, this sounds great. Let's make it happen. And since then, we've also installed what's known as a gravel garden, which is kind of pioneered by some workmanship in Germany, actually Cashy and Smith, and Jeff Epping kind of, along with Roy Diblick, have brought that idea over here. We have a demo, I consider a small demonstration garden of it. So we have that. We also just recently installed, as a part of a grant we received from Compeer Financial Group, a permeable paver ADA accessible area that houses accessible raised garden beds. So whether somebody's in a wheelchair or they need to sit on a stool to garden versus bending over. So we have that now as a really great feature that I think, you know, we were talking before about increasing accessibility in gardening and making it equal for all of those who may have physical limitations. And then surrounding that space, actually 2 weeks ago, we did a big volunteer event, and it is now full perennials. So it's known as a perennial matrix. So there's, besides that, we have our urban farm, no-mow lawn area, permaculture guilds, cut flower area. So there's a lot for people to come and see when they visit on Saturday.
Wonderful. So glad to hear that. For those of you just joining us, we are talking about the upcoming Secret Garden Walk, which is this Saturday, the 9th of July, rain or shine, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., sponsored by the Four Seasons Garden Club. And you were just hearing from Courtney Grieve, who is a horticulture instructor here at Gateway, and also with us, Linda Gatormson-Guy, twice past president of the Secret Four Seasons Garden Club. And she heads up publicity for this event each and every year. And so, Linda, before we start talking about the specific gardens, and there are certainly some intriguing ones on the tour, on the walk this year, just remind our listeners, those who maybe are not familiar with the Secret Garden Walk, about what you try to put together each and every year. What is this Secret Garden Walk all about? And in particular, what is secret about it?
Well, the secret is these are private homes. These are private spaces. These are homeowners who have been generous enough to open their property to a look-see for the general community. These are perhaps homes that you've driven by and it's a beautiful front yard. I wonder what they've done with the back. Well, this is your opportunity to see exactly that. Every year we are thrilled with the participation that we get from the community. When we contact some of these gardens, and it's usually by word of mouth. It's maybe a neighbor who has been on the garden walk and said, "Boy, my friend next door really should know about this." And we always have the opportunity for people to sign up to offer their garden or perhaps their friend's garden on the QT. We're looking for word of mouth gardens. That kind of thing. Our members are always on the lookout for gardens. We look for variety. We like to say that yes, there's something for everybody every year. There's small gardens, big gardens, old gardens, new gardens, renovated gardens, water gardens, just a little bit of something depending on what your gardening interest is going to be. You're going to find inspiration. And, if your inspiration is merely in a mixed planter, you're going to find plenty of those. So the variety is something that we look for. And the logistics have become a very important part of the tour. We've learned over the one of the many things we've learned over the years that the closer these gardens are together, the more people are going to enjoy the tour. They can spend more time in the garden as opposed to driving from one end of town to the other. So logistics have driven us on a number of occasions. This year, we are actually fairly spread out. It's not an impossible day, but the fact that we have incorporated two gardens that were originally slated for the 2020 tour, that puts us on the north side. That puts us convenient to Gateway, and that kind of put that whole association back together again. It seemed for years our gardens were more likely to be on the south side of Kenosha. Pleasant Prairie had a lot of gardens they loved to show off, and our north side gardeners were more shy. Now, for the last couple of years, we've had north side gardens, so it kind of rotates, and somewhat intentionally so, but just because of population, mobility, and interest, and all those things that change the environment of the city have affected our choices over the years, too.
So who ultimately makes the choice, in terms of determining what the garden walk will be in 2022? Is it a committee who is entrusted with making those final decisions?
We do have a committee. We have a small committee that's very dedicated to viewing the gardens ahead of time. We have a chairman and a co-chair who are kind of filter through the the addresses, the information that we collect. They might take a little look-see on their own before they turn it over to the rest of the committee. And again, there's a number of things that we're considering. The logistics, the accessibility. Is there parking on that street? Are we going to have to worry about, we're parking around the corner, down the block? You know, where can people put their cars? Because the attendance has been, it averages about 700 plus, in some, depending on weather and all of those uncontrollable things, but we want to make sure that people, aren't having to climb hedges and fences in order to get there.
Right.
But it's not that secret.
Right. Are any of these gardens, do they represent people who are part of the Four Seasons Garden Club, or by and large they tend not to be part of the Garden Club?
By and large, they tend not to be. We do have a sprinkling of members over the years that have been have opened their own homes, and we're always grateful for that. And she's a member of the Garden Club, but for the most part, this is a cross section of the citizens of Kenosha. So it includes, all the various neighborhoods in Kenosha, and for the most part, these are all people from outside the club. So these are generous folks, I got to tell you.
We're speaking with Lindica Tormson-Guy and Courtney Grieve about the upcoming Secret Garden Walk, which is this Saturday, July 9th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And the Secret Garden Walk this year, sponsored by the Four Seasons Garden Club, is comprised of six gardens.
These are the six private gardens,
right,
privately owned. That's citizens. Apart from our affiliation with Gateway on this particular walk.
Right, and a visit to Gateway's Horticulture Center is also part of the Secret Garden Walk this year, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. Linda, I have enjoyed, first of all, I really loved your opening essay in the booklet, in which you kind of talk about the various pleasures that are part of crafting and nurturing a beautiful garden, and then of course you also help put together the essays, although by and large I think they're written by the gardeners themselves. And as I read through, it seemed to me that a theme that emerged, and I suspect it wasn't a consciously chosen theme, but a theme of maybe resiliency or overcoming adversity or making a comeback, that theme appears in more than half of these gardens, which I found really intriguing.
That's interesting that you'd point that out, because actually that was something I specifically addressed in the guidebook for last year's walk. It was the persistence and the resiliency, and hey, we're back, mm-hmm. and you're all back too, because you're gardeners and you're made of tough stuff. And it has crept also into this year's attitude. The fact that there are two gardens that, after 2 years' delay, hey, they're still with us. They've still got a fabulous piece of property that you need to take a look at. That has driven part of it, and also I think the feeling that, well, maybe it's time that we just do kind of relax a minute, smell the roses, if you will, put our feet up, enjoy the greenery, and let's just enjoy these spaces. Mm. And you're right, Greg, it has turned into more of an editorial than anything else. There's
like
a lot of my personal feelings that weave its way into that welcome statement.
Sure, and again, it's beautifully written. And you were telling me before we went on the air that typically and understandably from a diplomatic point of view, if I were to ask you if you have a favorite among these gardens in the Garden Walk, typically your answer would be no. Or if you have a favorite, either you don't have a favorite or you'd rather not state your favorite. But this year, for kind of an interesting reason, you feel pretty comfortable saying that there is one of these gardens that means a lot to you, again, because of kind of your personal situation. And it's also a really lovely story behind it with Linda and Jerry Dembski.
Yeah.
So explain what it is about their garden that is special to you and, in a sense, makes it your favorite this year.
Well, as we talked earlier, health-wise, I have had a rough winter. And I'm still recovering from some issues that I dealt with over the late winter, early spring. So I find myself getting around with the use of a walker. That's not something I'm enjoying. That's something I'm hoping to get past. But in the meantime, I'm very appreciative of spaces that address handicapped issues. And just by chance, we had chosen one of the gardens partially because it's a lovely, lovely space under any circumstances. But for the very, very first time ever, we do have a garden that is 100% handicapped accessible. And that's through the choice of the homeowners, through the needs of one of the homeowners. So this space, when you find yourself in that position, you do become very appreciative of the spaces that allow you to enjoy the pastimes, the outdoors, the activity of gardening, as best you can under your new circumstances. So yes, the Dembski Garden is something that I feel real good about this year. They have dedicated the space to the convenience of enjoying gardening. Part of the things that they have done is to put in they have an asphalt path that winds its way through the garden, and this is not a huge backyard. This is a city garden, city space, and that asphalt path allows the homeowner who is in a wheelchair to access the beds to continue on with her love of gardening, and as a bonus, it provides entertainment for now grandchildren who are out there with go-karts and roller skates and doll buggies and all those things that are difficult to run across a lawn area. Mm. So it's become a family environment, not just a sterile environment that's dedicated to disabilities. Mm. So it's an all-encompassing space, and I think that's what people who do have challenges are looking for.
Sure, absolutely.
And we're just thrilled to be able to provide it on this particular year. So thank you to the Dembski family.
I think that's just great. And there's more than one garden on the tour this year that in which specific mention is made of kind of the way the garden evolves over the years as a family grows, as people get older or circumstances change. And there's something really wonderful about that, the way they kind of parallel our own lives.
Yeah.
I was really struck by the first garden that we read about in the booklet, because this is also something I don't remember from past garden walks, although correct me if I'm wrong, but this is a couple who are originally from Mexico. And mm-hmm. so there is an element of the exotic in that respect. I mean, it's not exotic to them, it's home to them. But
right.
but for the rest of us, there some interesting elements are brought in. Although they mention in their essay that some of what they would have liked to plant in their garden proved not to be possible because, as all of us know, Wisconsin is not Mexico when it comes to climate.
And, haven't we all been there?
Yeah, right.
Oh, I've got this wonderful tropical hibiscus.
Yeah, no, you
too
don't.
Bad for you. It's not going to make it over the winter. You know, we all learn those things.
Right. So they have made adaptions and created evidently a really, really lovely garden that maybe has some elements of what they think of as their Mexican.
They've done a lovely job of incorporating their culture and into the flora choices most obvious, and into the design elements too. And this is also the largest space that we've got. Mm. And I mentioned, you know, if your inspiration comes from a mixed planter, they've got some fabulous planters that are the first thing you may notice as you approach the garden, that there's individual gardens created within the space of very large planters. Mm. And then it expands into an extensive garden that's planted in the ground, as most of them are. So.
And I like that at the end of their essay, they make mention of, again, you said that it's a pretty large backyard, a pretty large garden, and it has been the site of things like family weddings and other really big events. And, of course, for some people who have that kind of garden, that kind of scope, that garden becomes like a beautiful framework or gorgeous setting for really meaningful events.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah.
So we move from there to another garden in which it also in some ways that theme of resiliency returns, and that is the home of Mark and Char Peterson. And they kind of talk about all of the changes that have occurred, including what happened after a hard winter when they lost all their peonies. I didn't think anything could kill off peonies. They're such tough, wonderful flowers, but evidently
it is Wisconsin.
It was apparently a really hard winter, so they had to make other decisions about what to kind of bring back. Mm. But evidently, through all of the changes, this is a distinctively beautiful garden.
Yes, this is kind of a classic backyard garden with a 5-foot border of mixed plantings, and like they have pointed out in the write-up, that they change it continually over the years. What you saw 2 years ago, you might not see this year, and you might see again next year, but it's always an opportunity to update, to rotate, to enjoy plants that, you know, you didn't have space for a couple of years ago, and, well, gee, you know, now we've got that peony space. Let's try that.
Love that. I also am so struck by something they say at the very end of their essay when they say, "We see our gardens as a community service, providing beauty to everyone who passes." What a lovely thought.
And it truly is. Actually, you notice that the first area that she refers to in their planting efforts was actually outside their fence, creating a little 3-foot wide swath of garden that is mostly there for passersby. Mm. So,
lovely.
Yeah, very generous gardeners here.
So there's another garden that is called the Sharing Garden, and the family who has this garden makes mention of being part of what they call a plant sharing family. And what an interesting notion. I'd never really kind of stopped to think about that, but maybe you can expand on what this plant sharing family is all about and the kind of sharing that goes on. It's lovely.
Well, every garden doesn't necessarily originate in a greenhouse. Somehow, some gardens originate in, you know, Aunt Tilly's backyard, and you've get a little bit of Grandma's bleeding heart and other plants that you've collected from friends and family over the years, and active gardeners do a lot of sharing that way. Plants grow. The best way to nourish so many plants is by division. Well, now we've divided the plant, what are we going to do with the extras? And there's always another gardener out there who'd love to take them off your hands. So this is a family that has kind of grown their gardening and grown their gardening interest by the sharing that that has created it.
I just absolutely love that.
I actually don't think that gardeners can turn away plants. it's a problem.
You're just not wired that way.
No. It's like somebody dropping a puppy on your doorstep.
Yes.
Oh.
We have to have them.
I'm going to give it a home. I like that very much.
By the way, Greg, the garden you were just referring to, this is one of those the larger garden with the Mexican influences, and this garden, which is located on 22nd Avenue, were the two that were held over from 2020. And if anybody remembers, how can you forget the construction on 22nd Avenue? That's why we've held that one for another year.
Okay.
You just couldn't get to it.
Yeah.
So, but it's worth a stop.
At long last. Very good. By the way, in this, they make mention about, they say at one point, our service berry in the corner keeps us delighted with early spring blooms and red berries in the fall. What's a service berry? I've never seen that or heard that.
Service berry.
You want to take that one.
The genus on it is Amelanchier. And so there is a native service berry, which potentially they could have. Being native, it's more well adapted to our soils and our local conditions. And it does have beautiful white flowers. Early summer, some people will also call it... not just a June berry, but beautiful white flowers. And then it turns into kind of a oval-shaped, slightly grayish-green leaf. And you can find them either single-stem, but mostly you're going to find them as a multi-stemmed. I consider it more of like an ornamental shrub, usually reaching about 10 to 12 feet tall. And then you can kind of control the spread if it's a multi-stem species. And then there are some cultivars out there that are available. We have one by our building called Obelisk. So it's very actually narrow and short at the same time. And so there's a lot of different varieties that you can and check out. I know Schwartz Nursery just up the road has a good variety. Breezy Hill, Johnson Nursery in Menominee Falls carries a great selection of the native that they propagate on their own as well.
Whoa.
It's a great little understory tree. It does well. I have old oak trees and a service berry that thrives under that canopy environment.
One
more thing you might consider if you battle shade.
Add that with your red bud, and you've got some really neat interest going on.
Very good. I'm proceeding through the booklet, and of course, we've already talked about the Dembski's garden. That's the one that is 100% handicapped accessible on 47th Avenue. Then we get to the home of Penny Keeling on 31st Avenue. And I like how in her garden, which sounds like it's full of variety, that it changes a lot, and there's not always a careful, meticulous plan. And of course, some gardeners meticulously and strictly plan out, at least to the best of their ability, what's going to happen. And it sounds like this is a gardener that is a bit more spontaneous in her approach, and we probably get a real sense of that in what we see then.
I think that's exactly true. And I love the fact that she treats it like a confession. It's like, how many of us do exactly that? I planned that. It just happened to be perfect. But Penny has a lovely smallish space. This, again, is a city garden. And what she has done also is a lovely approach to hardscaping. There's a patio area that is very well integrated with these casual gardening spaces, and it shows that there's where the planning shows in. You can't just wait for hardscape to happen. You have to make some decisions as far as where that patio is going to best serve you. So it's not only patio space. She has an not a pergola, not a, let's call it an arbor that's slightly shaded for seating on this patio. And it, like I said, it's all very, very well integrated with casual gardening space.
Very good. I like how she refers to when she purchased this home as the backyard being a blank canvas. And of course, it sounds like she's made some lovely decisions on how to fill that canvas.
It is now a work of art.
Yeah. Yes. Then we come to a garden that that this couple of Milton Jackie Dean have been tending for 50 years. That's just staggering to think about a garden that has existed as a loving part of the family for half a century.
And that's where you're going to see changes chronicled over the years, where as the family grows and the needs change, it's out with the sandbox and in with the vegetable garden. And it's, you know, and the swing set leaves in order to create space for some other new plantings. And then when the grandkids come along, then it changes again. So it's a matter of ebb and flow and reading the family's needs, no matter, you know, how the family's needs are changing. So in 50 years, yes, you're going to see a few changes, and they're very pleased to share them with our guests.
In her essay, she mentions, this is Milton Jackie Dean, and there's reference made to Jackie's fondness for miniature gardens. Mm-hmm. Courtney, can you just briefly explain what it means when someone is doing miniature gardening? What is that?
Sure. You can kind of see it on a few different levels, whether indoors or outdoors. So if you maybe don't have an outdoor garden, maybe you're in an apartment or a condo, you can find maybe some sort of a glass bulb that, or a glass structure that you can basically put a rock layer, maybe a sand layer and rock layer, and then find miniature foliage plants. And they have little figurines out there, like little houses and fairies and little trolls and mushrooms and things. So some people refer to that as a fairy garden or a miniature garden. If you take that outside, there are a lot of dwarf varieties of plant material, dwarf irises, hostas, things like that, that can help create that feel of miniature.
Love that. That's a really, the notion had never really occurred to me, but makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So I always think of it from my kids' perspective. You know, what does a four-year-old see? Mm-hmm. They see the world very differently than you do. So
that's a really good point. So it's a wonderful variety of private gardens, six private gardens. And Linda, just briefly explain for somebody who attends the garden walk, this is for the sake of somebody who never has done this. Mm-hmm. In a sense, what do they do? Where do they go? How do they take in these six gardens as well as
so glad you asked, Greg. Now, the tickets, and actually the document that Greg has been referring to is the guidebook, which actually it's the ticket that doubles as the guidebook to the event. The descriptions of the gardens are all enclosed there and written in their own words by the homeowners, just kind of expressing what they do, how they do it, why they do it, and why they love it. And that's something that's important to us, to get their impressions there, not just the impressions of a casual observer. The guidebook also includes information on basically where the money goes. This is a fundraiser, and we are a nonprofit that support a lot of environmental and beautification causes around the Kenosha and Kenosha County area. And concentrations are listed in the book, so you know exactly that, you know, what the Kenosha event is supporting Kenosha activities. The ticket book, the guidebooks are on sale throughout the community. There are eight different ticket vendors. These are garden centers and florists that have been working with us, most of them since we've been doing the walk, and The locations around Kenosha are a Summer's Garden Florist in downtown Kenosha, Stein's on Green Bay Road, Suburban Garden Center just on the road here on 30th Avenue, Sunnyside Florists and Gifts in the center of town, and then moving into Pleasant Prairie, Anton's Greenhouse and Garden Center on Cooper Road. In Sturtevant, we step out of Kenosha County for Milliger's, is one of our ticket outlets, and in Paddock Lake, Westosha Floral, and then we have one vendor over the Illinois line. If you're coming up from Gurnee and that area, you want to stop for tickets at Balmus Flowers in Gurnee, and the tickets are $8 in advance, and actually $8 at any of these outlets through the day of the show. And if you buy a ticket at the individual homes, then it's $10 on the day of the tour. The homes, the addresses, and information that, you know, we were just discussing here is all available on our website. If you do choose to wait, if you're waiting out the weather, it's looking real good for Saturday. Mm-hmm. But if you're waiting till the last minute, you can go on online and get all this information at fourseasonsgardenclub.org. And that's the numeral four, Seasons Garden Club, all one word, .org. So if you want to sneak in the back door and check out those addresses without hitting one of the ticket outlets, you've got the opportunity to buy a ticket on site.
And you can bring children 12 and under for free if
absolutely
they accompany you. And it's
as long as they're accompanied.
Right, and a couple of the gardens will have some
under
really
close supervision.
Things. Yes, for sure.
And well behaved.
Yes, please, all of the above. Very good. Courtney, just a couple of minutes for you to just say, for people who also choose to visit the Horticulture Center,
sure,
which is open for Saturday's garden walk, what people can see and enjoy.
Yeah, well, I think that it's going to be a great opportunity. Many people don't even know that we have a horticulture program as a part of Gateway Technical College, and it's great to see what our offerings are. And we have to say a great big thank you to the Four Seasons Garden Club members, because they actually sponsor scholarships for our students at two different times of the year. And that has made it very accessible for some of our students to continue with classes. And so with that, they'll see our facility itself actually was updated about 10 and a half years ago, which, you know, 10 and a half years, you say, wow, but it's a very modern facility that is has really great classroom space and supports all sorts of classes, even floral classes, soil classes. We have three large greenhouses that are broken down into essentially six smaller greenhouses that incorporate LED lighting, hydroponic growing, aquaponic growing. Like I said, we have a newly updated and remodeled head house, which is one of our main areas, kind of like a separate classroom space. We're actually hoping that people in community groups realize that we're here, because they can actually request to utilize our space for monthly meetings and things like that. So it's a great opportunity for us to connect again with the community. But like I talked about earlier, the accessible garden area that is new, with some new perennial plantings, gravel garden as an opportunity for a different style of planting. Our urban farm actually is an Eagle Scout project a few years back, has all raised garden beds, which makes it wonderful to see. And the students this summer have been really working hard on our vegetables out there. And then our cut flower gardens, permaculture guilds. So there's really something for everybody.
And explain exactly where they find the Horticulture Center.
Sure. If you're coming on to the Kenosha campus, located at 3520 30th Avenue, you would actually enter by the main marquee sign and then head west to down the road. And if you look just what would be to your left or the south, you will see our building that is in a kind of a peach, mint, and vanilla clad, and you'll see the greenhouses as well. You'll also see a sign for the Pike Creek Arboretum, which will be a feature as well, and so that will help direct you. We will have events or signs out for horticulture special event, so they can find us that way.
And I need to clarify that you do not need the ticket to the garden walk. You do not have to purchase a garden walk ticket in order to stop by the Gateway Gardens. Oh. So we refer to it as a bonus garden on the tour.
We are open to the public. So
wow. Fantastic. Well, very good. Well, what a lovely event this promises to be. And yes, it looks like Mother Nature is going to cooperate nicely. So for this 20th Secret Garden Walk, sponsored by the Four Seasons Garden Club, Linda Gatormson-Guy and Courtney Grieve, wonderful to speak with both of you. Thank you so much for being a part of the morning show today.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.